How do you avoid the biggest mistakes when looking for a financial planner? And what does success look like to you 5 or 10 years from now when you're creating a financial plan? Hello and welcome. My name is Gino Barbaro, one of the co-founders of Barbaro 360. And with me today, I have Jason Stone. He's a financial planner with Secure Wealth Management, helping families and business owners create values-based plans. I love that. Values-based plans for investing, retirement, and long-term financial security. Welcome to the show, Jason. How are you doing, brother?
Doing great, Gino. Thank you for having me.
I just want to let you know two things. Number one, your hair is looking great. And number two, I love the color of your shirt. You are rocking. And I'm a little boring here. You're looking good today. Anyway, I got to know Jason over the last few weeks. And we've been talking about financial plans. I love his model. I love the way he approaches financial planning. So let's share with the listeners, you know, what does that process actually look like? Number one, to you, since you've been doing it for a while, you can even possibly give us your credentials. And number two, what makes your process different from everyone else's process?
Sure. So started in the business back in 2007. So yes, my hair looks great and I don't look that old. That's the AI enhancement on the Zoom. But been doing this now for almost 20 years. So not wow. Too bad. Process wise, I mean, it's really about understanding what the clients want. Like that's the most important thing, like digging under the surface and making sure that when we're creating a plan, it's not a cookie cutter thing. It's really customized to what the clients want. And I think one of the biggest differentiators is like, I'm a financial advisor. Like we love giving financial advice. So that's not just giving you a cookie cutter investment portfolio. It's really financial planning. And what does the whole picture look like? So we're looking at cash flow and budgeting. We're looking at tax. We're looking at insurance planning. We're looking at retirement planning, which is, of course, what everybody is kind of concerned and worried about. But not just those things, but how do they all interact together, right? And one of the things that you and I have connected about really is really the emotion of money, right? And also about how different people have different conceptions thoughts that they've learned since childhood about how they're interacting or dealing with this stuff and bringing all those things to the table and figuring out how to implement those things into the process too.
So. Jason, your timing sucks. 2007, I mean, seriously, could you have picked the worst time? So for anybody listening to this, if you're saying to yourself, I'm not ready, now's not the right time. Well, I started in multifamily with Jake in 2011. That was probably one of the worst times in recent memory to start in real estate. Now you look back and you say, hey, that was the best time. But at the time, it was horrible. I couldn't get financing. I couldn't raise capital. There were deals everywhere, and it was difficult. Now, the point that I'm trying to make is if you're listening to this, and you're probably saying, well, now is not the right time. Now is the time. If you want to create a legacy, legacy is not something you leave. Legacy is something that you set in motion today with Jason as we're listening to this right now, because they say in real estate, the best time to buy a deal is 20 years ago. The next best time is to buy the deal today. Jason, what made you start in 2007? When you started in 2007, did you see the clouds? Did you see the disruptions? Or are you just like a young dude going, I can't wait to make my millions?
So, I mean, again, another great connection point. I started in the real estate space before I was an advisor. So that's another unique feature to my practice is when we're doing financial planning, like I don't think that stocks are the be all end all. We integrate a lot of discussions about real estate in that. I had my residential license for 10 years from 2002 to 2012. Worked with a developer doing apartment to condo conversion. So like I have a fairly deep bench of knowledge when it comes to the real estate side as well. So not only did I help crash the stock market when I entered this industry, right? I brought the housing market down first, which is really my claim to fame. But that's what happened was in 07 when I was working on the sales team in Long Beach, we're sitting on properties and we're doing deals where it's zero finance mortgage, right? No money down, no credit check. Here's a blank check for $600,000 to go buy this 800 square foot condo. And you're like, wait a minute, like that guy, you know, makes $30,000 a year and you're just signed him up for a payment of $4,000 a month. Like, guys, I don't think these numbers are going to work. And they said, your job's sales, not telling us how to run it. Uh-huh. And that was actually when I pivoted and I said, all right, well, I don't know how long this market's going to last, and I shifted into the advisory side of things.
Now, there's a reason why I like you other than your hair. It's because you're in real estate, and you get that component. And I think most financial planners that I've spoken to, it's either stocks, bonds, equities, or it's nothing. Or maybe some life insurance, like they're selling you products. But maybe for those types of people, maybe real estate may fit, whether they're a limited partner or they're doing the deals themselves. I love that aspect of it. But I need to ask this question because you had said something that really piqued my interest. Understanding what they want. Somebody listening to this, what do you think most of your clients, when they come to you, what is it that they truly want from a financial planner and from you?
So here's the funny answer. I think it's either A, they just want to be told what to do, or B, which I think is the majority answer, they really want peace of mind. They want somebody to tell them that they're on track or that they're okay, because they know that this stuff is important, but they really don't take the time on their own or make the effort on their own to go through and do the analysis. I'm not doing anything that's revolutionary, right? But what we are doing is we're taking the data and really breaking it down in hopefully an understandable bite-sized way that makes people feel comfortable. And once we can tell them, hey, you're on track for retirement, or you're ready to retire, or you know, you need to save a little bit more money, and there's kind of an outline and a plan, then people feel way better about things. So I think that's 100% the number one thing people are looking for.
And I know what you do is you really lean into the education component. I don't think you just tell somebody, hey, this is what you need to do. You walk them through. Give me an idea of what that looks like when you're working with a potential client and you're giving them opportunities and you're showing them a plan. How do you help them? How do you educate them on actually taking action towards that plan?
I mean, like I just mentioned, I mean, it starts in bite-sized chunks, right? So when we're going through and looking at a cash flow, people a lot of times don't even track how much money they're spending. So there's a lot of surprise when we're either saying, hey, like you actually on paper should be saving $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 a month. You know, if somebody's in a hole, they know, right? But even the best savers are like, I'm not saving enough money. And so you have to kind of break those things down and again, make them feel comfortable with the fact that, hey, you're doing great, right? Nobody's giving us a pat on the back when we come home from work every day, you know, and no matter what we're doing most of the time, right? So to give somebody an attaboy goes a long way. And then when we're just breaking things down from the education side, something I tell every single client in the first meeting is, I'm not here to teach you everything I know, right? But I want you to feel comfortable when you're at the cocktail party next week to be able to talk about, hey, this is what happened in the S&P. I got a general idea why, because you just have this much interest, right? You don't need to know everything that we know, but again, that you're comfortable, you're confident in what you're doing with your money, and that's going to carry the day. And we do that by, I just want to keep it simple, right? I'm not here to ETF, ABC, right? Give you all this jargon. Like I want to try to keep things as simple as possible, make it a way that people can understand and just keep it on a pace that fits for everybody. So
I started the show by asking these two questions. How do you avoid the biggest mistakes when hiring a financial planner? Hit that one for me first.
So I think the biggest mistake is you're either interviewing somebody purely on expectations for investment returns. Recipe for disaster, right?
Oh, I love that.
I would love to tell you I'm the best investment advisor in the world. I don't think that's the case. But what we want is consistent, steady returns that tie back to your plan, right? We want success, not maximum value. So I think if you're looking for somebody for that, you're looking at it for the wrong reason. Second thing is people really get hung up on fees sometimes. Fees are important, but everybody needs to get paid, right? There's a value to everything. So if you're in there looking for the best advice at the lowest cost, like those things don't necessarily always correlate together. So have the right expectation that you're going to go in and pay something for service. And then I think the other biggest mistake is people don't interview, right? Either you're worried about finding the right guy or you're just going along too trustingly with your friend's guy or woman. Like the biggest thing is find somebody that fits you, right? I'm not the perfect advisor for everyone. There's a lot of advisors that are out there. So interviewing a couple different people, seeing whose personality gels, I mean, those things are really important because at the end of the day, it's all about confidence and trust. Like that's the most important thing you can find in an advisor.
It's interesting, Jason. I need to jump in for a second and really mirror this. And this transcends, I think, all businesses. If I am a real estate professional and I'm raising capital, those mistakes that you laid out is what a limited partner or somebody investing in a deal passively should not do. They should look at the experience. Don't worry about what the internal rate of return is. Don't chase the highest return. Chase somebody who's been through a couple of market cycles, who's been through the ups and the downs. The second one is don't worry. I shouldn't say don't worry, but look at the fees and see what the totality of it. Because someone who's a very good operator in real estate needs to get paid because it's a difficult endeavor. It's a difficult investment. It is highly management intensive. Now, obviously, if those fees are out of line with the market and you have subpar returns, you'll see that over the long term. And the third one is so important when you don't interview, when you don't go out and actually jump on a plane and go look at these properties. It's very good. You should do that with your financial planner. You should walk into that office. You should sit down across from Jason. And if you can't, have a couple of Zoom calls and really find out what Jason's strategies are as he's laying them out right now, how he's going to make you feel confident about the plan that he's setting apart. So when you're listening to this, take this not only in just to the financial planning world, but this goes into any realm, whether you're hiring a CPA, whether you're hiring an attorney. I think that what you've said is just excellent advice when you're going into the professional space. Now, the second question that I led off with was, what does success look like 5 to 10 years down the road? If you had to say that to a client, I don't even think clients would ask that question. But for you working with me, what would success to me look like for me 5 or 10 years down the road?
So in true financial planning speak, it depends. That's the answer to everybody
you
always, right?
You guys are like lawyers, aren't you? Lawyers say the same thing. It depends. And I agree with you because everyone is unique. I totally agree with that.
And because you're customizing plans for everyone and everybody has different goals and desires what they're trying to get out of this stuff, right? It really gets customized to the person. So if we're planning for retirement, right? Are we hitting your retirement target? It's not about how much money. It's do you have enough money to retire and to spend, right? A couple years ago, I got a client that retired, has a pension. She's a writer. I bring this story up all the time and I tell her, right? She has almost no spending in retirement. She's the happiest client that I have, right? Because it's not about how much money has she accumulated. Is she doing the thing that she wants to do in retirement? She wants to write. She likes the peace and quiet and the challenge and the artistry that goes along with that. She's probably the happiest client that I have. And every conversation we have is amazing. And she's by no means even close to the wealthiest client that we have, right? The flip side to that is if you're more of an accumulator, right? Somebody that's younger, 30, 40, 50, and you're trying to navigate through kids, college savings, life insurance, buying a house, selling a house, dealing with your elderly parents, right? There's all these different moving parts. I'm very much in the middle of that right now myself. So success for somebody like that 5 or 10 years out is, did I navigate all those things without making major mistakes? And again, there's a lot of emotions. There are a lot of different parts that are tied into those things. So an advisor should be there to help keep you calm, take some of the emotions out of the decision making that you're trying to do, and make sure that you're staying on that path that we're laying out in the plan. And when we get to that 5 or 10 year mark and we're going through the benchmark and look at where were we, where are we now, and where do we still need to go, that we're still on that track. That's what success is going to look like.
I enjoy this question here because I was looking at it and I was trying to set this whole interview up and I was trying to make people look at it from the perspective of like, okay, I'm going out and I need to hire a financial planner. Anyone listening to this right now, if you're wanting to take action, this is all the stuff that you need to really be focusing on. But this question, I love this one because it's what information do you insist on understanding before giving any recommendations? Like that's important. Like you just laid out the 5 to 10 year plan. But if I'm coming into you and I'm coming to work with you, or you should say any financial planner, any good financial planner, what information do you think I should be able to give to you?
I mean, again, different components. If I'm talking about the investment side, right? How am I allocating my investment portfolio? Where is that money going? Is it being invested, period? It's crazy to see how many times money is just sitting idle inside a client account. From a more broader planning perspective, right? Is my spending matching where I need to go or where I need to be? Am I saving enough? Am I putting money in the right buckets, right? For that 30, 40, 50-year-old client that's saving in 8 different places, am I allocating the right money in the right places for what I want is going to be the other thing that you really want the right advice for.
What happens if I'm hiring a financial planner and I am not hitting my goals? What are some of the things you see that clients are doing that aren't, you know, that when you give them a plan that they're not executing? What mistakes are they making?
I would say one of the most common ones is you hire the advisor and then ignore the advisor. So we can build the plan and then, you know, you still actually have to go back and execute on it. So if you're not changing behavior, and again, going back to the emotions and different things about money, right? You're just checking a box and not actually working with the planner or the advisor, then that I think is a very consistent, common one. Otherwise, I mean, generally it's going to be because something derails it, right? So every 2 to 3 years, we have a major life change event, right? Something happens to us, to our kids, we sell a house, we lose a job, there's constant change. So if you were on the plan that we started and then you have this big speed bump and you're not communicating with the advisor, or we're not talking about how to rebalance or recalibrate the plan based on that change, then now we're going to get further and further skewed off of where the plan needs to go, right? So planning is not static. A plan that was created 5 years ago is not good forever. It's a perpetual, constant adjustment. So continuing to work with your advisor to make sure that you're getting those things re-geared and making sure that it's going in the right place is really important too.
So what Jason is saying right now, as you're listening to this, if you haven't gotten back to your financial advisor in the last couple of years and something's changed and they haven't reached out to you, they haven't stayed in touch with you, and they haven't learned about your goals going forward, maybe it's time to pick up the phone and start interviewing other financial planners, because that's an important component with estate planning, with asset protection, with all of that. It's called planning because proper planning prevents poor performance. And Jason can't read your mind. The financial planner can't read your mind, but there should at least be something in their system to have touch points every 6 months or once, at least yearly, to hit up on that.
One more point to that. I would say the most common feedback that I get from new clients that are coming from other advisors is, I talk to my advisor once a year, right? There's no planning. There's no ongoing engagement that's happening to talk about all the different things that are happening with a client's money. And that becomes so transactional and it's only about investment management. So if you're not hitting triple digit returns, or sometimes even if you are, right, that's not what the client cares about the most. And so you're not giving them the right advice, and they're looking for it somewhere else. So you could be the best money manager in the world, but if you're not giving the client what they really want, they're not going to stay with you.
So would you say it's more, when you look at it, of a holistic approach? You're looking at the whole. You're not just trying to hit target returns. You're not trying to hit an IRR. You're not trying to just do retirement savings. You're not just trying to invest in equities. You're not trying to buy some real estate. You're trying to really pull the whole thing together for this individual, and each one is unique. And that's what's cool about the whole thing, because it's always different. It's like a puzzle you're trying to put together for somebody, and everyone has different ideals. Someone wants to become the next Elon Musk. Someone wants to just retire when they're 48 and they want to sit on the beach and write. You're not there telling them what to do. You're just there showing them how you can accomplish that, correct?
That's 100% correct. I mean, you're pulling straight from my introductory advisory conversation, right? Every puzzle is different, and that's the beauty of the job, is that there's no consistency to what we're doing person to person. It's always different, and that's what I enjoy the most about this job, for sure.
So who is your ideal client? If, you know, somebody picks up the phone and someone calls Jason, like, who do you love to talk to on the phone?
I mean, more than anything, it's somebody that wants to make a change or wants to do those things. It's not about the dollar amounts, right? I gave you the example of the retired client that writes. She's not my biggest client by any means, and many times most advisors are not going to take her on as a client at all. I mean, we do have the financial component to it, right? We're looking for certain things, but we don't have a client minimum. We have clients that are in their 20s. We have clients that are in their 90s. So we really run the spectrum of working with all kinds of different folks. I love the advice component. If we would do only that, if people would pay for that the same way they pay for advisory, I mean, we would do only financial planning all day long. It's much more interesting. It's much more engaging with people. But I think that's also what's helped us grow the business over time is, you know, when we're blending those two things together and showing clients how those things really interact and work together, then you're creating better value for them. So,
last question, and I think this might be a tough one for you to answer, but that word risk. Everyone is so afraid of that word risk, and they don't want to hit it head on. They don't want to mitigate it. They don't want to limit the downside risk. How do you view risk, and how do you help clients mitigate that risk?
So there's risk in everything, right? Mm-hmm. So when we're talking holistically, right, we have risk in insurance or somebody passing away or risk in not having an estate plan or risk in not paying enough taxes, right? All of these different layers. And so I think mostly you're talking about risk in the investment side. But again, it's different for everybody. So you really dial into that by having these conversations, by getting to understand the clients and where their comfort levels are, and then helping them understand where you need to take it and where you don't want to take it. Do I need life insurance or do I not? Do I need to save extra money for taxes or do I not? Do I need to make sure that I'm increasing my stock allocation and reducing something else over here to hit my target return? You know, all of those things have different risk components and everybody's different. So how do we make it aligned? How do I make you comfortable and make you know that you chose to do it or not do it? And that's going to be the best path forward. And if you need a nudge, again, as the advisor, like if we're being too conservative or we're being too aggressive beyond the goal, then how do I mold you or nudge you in the direction that we need to and get you to move that much so that we can stay on track?
I love that.
It's trust and know the client, like know what they need, know where they need to be pushed, know how they want to kind of interact with you, and then steer them that way the best you can. That's the best way to control risk.
Jason, where can the listeners get a hold of you? I'm going to put all the information in the show notes as well, but where can they, you know, book a call with you? Where can they learn more about your services?
So you can book us direct through the website, securawm.com. You can also call me direct. My direct office line, 657-443-6900, or email me, jason@securawm.com. And I mean, we're available. We're on. I'll be working Monday on the holiday. I mean, we love what we do, so.
It's interesting. I love having these kinds of conversations because, as you see, Jason started back in 2007 in the space when it was probably the worst time. And what I love about his story, he has real estate experience. So he's not out there as a financial planner just trying to sell products and services. He's looking at you as a holistic person, as a unique person. And the right answer is it depends, because it's different for every single one of you. And for you to know what it is for you, he just gave you the phone number. What was your phone number again?
657-443-6900. Direct to my desk. No 800 number right there.
If you're there and you're ready and you're saying to yourself, I need to secure my future. I need to set my legacy in motion today. I can't wait any longer because there's risk. He talked about risk of doing things. There's a bigger risk of not doing something and not taking that first step and at least not getting educated and seeing what that looks like. That's the biggest risk that I think we all are faced with today. I want to thank everybody for spending some time with Jason and me, myself today. This is Gino Barbaro of Barbaro 360, and I'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.